Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and while the 9/11 attacks on the World Trade Center towers slowed skyscraper construction briefly, they are back and taller than ever. Construction advances mean they can go higher and even spread out as they go up, and at the same time, we're told, be more environmentally friendly. But that hasn't stopped some from suggesting it's time to landmark the skyline in New York City and slow it down. So let's talk about skyscrapers. The tall, the super tall, the mega tall, with Judith Dupre, an architectural historian with a new updated edition of her book, Skyscrapers, A History of the World's Most Extraordinary Buildings. Welcome to WNYC.
Hello, Brian.
And also with us, Rick Cook, founding partner of Cook Fox Architects, whose projects range from the Bank of America Tower at One Bryant Park to the Stephen Sondheim Theater. Rick Cook, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
And I should say, this very intriguing-looking book is as tall as Robert Gates' book is thick. So it's laid out like a skyscraper. And what's the tallest building in the world right now, Judith?
Right now, the tallest building is the Burj Khalifa in Dubai. It's clocking in at 2,717 feet.
How many stories would that be?
Gosh, now you're asking me the hard questions.
Just because we don't think of it in terms of feet. So I don't know how tall that would be compared to, say, the Freedom Tower, which is now once again the tallest building in the United States. Right.
So Freedom Tower is actually only 1776 feet, so it's quite
wow.
a bit
1,000 feet higher than that.
Higher, and the newest tallest, the Kingdom Tower, is underway in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia, and that will be the first skyscraper to break the mythic 1,000-meter mark.
I see the word super tall in your book as a noun, not an adjective. So you describe a building as a super tall?
Well, there are skyscrapers, the merely tall. And then there are super talls, which are buildings that are over 300 meters. And then there are megatalls, and those are buildings that are over 600 meters.
So listeners, call in with anything you want to say or ask about skyscrapers, 212-433-9692. Do you work in or live in or next to, perhaps to your chagrin, a super tall or a mega tall? What's that like? Do you have a favorite addition to the skyline? 212-433-9692 for Judith Dupre, author of Skyscrapers, A History of the World's Most Extraordinary Buildings, which, as I said, is a super tall book. You have to have just the right kind of coffee table for this book, I would say. Also with us, Rick Cook, founding partner of Cook Fox Architects, whose projects include Bank of America Tower at One Bryant Park and the Stephen Sondheim Theater, among other things. Rick, your book, I should say your firm, is in the book with one of New York's tallest buildings, the Bank of America Tower. But I have to ask, does its spire serve a purpose beyond adding to the height? This is the same question that came up about the new World Trade Center one.
Yeah, no, it's not an antenna. The one on the adjacent building, the Condé Nast building, happens to serve a purpose as a receiving antenna. But the spire on One Bryant Park is compositional. No specific purpose other than a lighting element, architectural composition.
How much do you think about function when you design a skyscraper? Obviously, you have to think about it a lot. I realize that. But, you know, I grew up in a two-story house in Queens, thinking skyscrapers are interesting if you're looking at the skyline or something, or an architect's rendering in a cool book like this, but that skyscrapers are not people-friendly, either to work in or live in. How do you deal with that reality to the extent that it is a reality as an architect?
Well, the challenge is these are workplaces. Right. Typically, a commercial office building is a workplace. So the focus is on the healthiest, most productive workplace, a place where people feel good. So for us, the focus is on that first, not so much the object making on a skyline, but what it does, how it works, how it makes people's lives better. That's the aspiration.
And Judith, what about for you as an appreciator of skyscrapers? Are they fun to look at from afar? but really kind of oppressive in terms of the human experience in general?
Well, they're incredible to look at from afar. I mean, anyone who's been on the Staten Island Ferry and looked across, especially in the late afternoon, and seeing all of Lower Manhattan just rising golden-like from the bedrock, it's an extraordinary sight. I think that what's happening in the last several decades, people are really beginning to rethink the skyscrapers at the sidewalk level, including amenities, dealing with wind currents, and all the things that traditionally have made these big buildings inhospitable. Now they're starting to do things that are inviting the public in. And certainly Bank of America Tower is one of the most hospitable skyscrapers we have in town.
Elizabeth, go ahead, Rick. You can add to that about your building.
Well, the thought for us was how to make this building integrated with the city fabric. So if we think about Bryant Park being the kind of front yard, the building has something called an urban garden room, which could be conceived of as the front porch for the building. And then on site, it's kind of incorporated as part of the building as a connection to the subway system, too. So the building was really thought of as knit together with urban fabric at the ground level.
And you'll be speaking, both of you, I gather, at the New York Public Library about not just super tall, but super green. And One Bryant Park qualifies, right?
It certainly
yes.
does. Shall I toot your horn, Rick? One Bryant Park sure. is the largest structure given LEED Platinum rating, which is the highest rating that the U.S. Green Building Council gives.
What does it take to get a LEED Platinum rating for a skyscraper?
Rick?
It's a series of things. They deal with energy, of course, but also water, the quality of the workplace, the quality of the air, what kinds of products the building is made out of, whether those are sustainable. The building incorporates things called blast furnace slag in lieu of cement. So there are a whole series of things that add up to this rating system, and it's the LEED rating system was written by the U.S. Green Building Council, and it's currently our best standard by which to judge how green a building is.
Somebody told me that the building winds up independent of the power grid or the water system. Is that accurate?
Yeah, what we're dealing with more and more now is a separation between what you would call site energy and source energy. So one is how much do you use on site, how much energy, and modern banking institutions and modern business uses a lot of energy, not so much the buildings, but the use. So the question then becomes, how do we make it more efficiently? And the energy grid in the Northeast in particular is fairly inefficient. We waste about two-thirds of the energy when we make it and we get it to the site. So if we can make energy on site, it's much more efficient. So One Bryant Park, the Bank of America Tower, has a 4.6 megawatt on-site power generation facility, and it captures the waste heat, which allows us to produce about two-thirds of the building's annual energy use on site at about three times the efficiency of the grid.
How about that?
Yeah. That's one of the big changes in skyscraper design, Brian, is that the buildings are creating energy. They're creating their own energy.
Robert in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Robert.
Yes, good morning. I have two questions for your guests today. The first is, what technological advances have been made of late that will allow buildings to be built as tall as the one in Dubai and in New York City and elsewhere? And the second is, would anyone happen to know if the Dubai building is fully occupied? I'll take my response off.
Thank you. Judith, do you know the answer to either question?
I think that the building in Dubai is almost fully occupied. The Burj Khalifa, but I don't think it's completely occupied yet.
It's 163 stories, by the way. We looked it up to answer
Thank
my question
you.
Before of how many floors.
Thank you. And if you look at that design, it kind of telescopes. So it's hard to know how they're counting the floors in that building. But thank you for finding that out for us. I think that, Rick, do you want to address the new technologies?
Well, I think the technologies for a skyscraper are based upon its backbone, and we call that the core. So it's really about wind resistance and about elevatoring. A skyscraper is what we'd call a cantilever sticking straight out of the ground, and its primary load is wind load. So we're starting to have buildings which are dynamic, that adjust based upon the loading, and we'll see more and more of that. We'll read data and have the structure actually adapt to the wind influences. So that will allow us to go taller. And the more and more advances we have in elevatoring, the easier it is. Ultimately, there's a point of efficiency where the vertical core gets so big that the leftover space around it isn't very efficient. Mm-hmm.
John at Waterside Plaza, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi, great show. I want to express an objection to the thought at the beginning of the segment of restricting high-rise in Manhattan. I think it's time for us to stop suppressing our architecture and our culture. We could have built Dubai in the Hudson Yards and had that entire economy here. Instead, we're insisting that they do it somewhere else.
John, thank you. But there are tensions. There are different competing interests. So, for example, there's been particular concern, Rick, all over the super tall buildings on 57th Street and their impact, if nothing else, on Central Park's access to sunlight. Those towers are being built as of right, as they call it. But Michael Kimmelman in the Times architecture page suggests that the city might want to start landmarking skylines like London does, evidently. I guess that's not a popular idea among architects.
Yeah, it's not in the nature of the aspirational quality of designing skyscrapers in New York. And many cities have these view corridors. Vancouver protects their view to the mountains, which gets this idea about biophilic design, that we feel good when we feel connected to nature. I think there's historic skylines, which are in fact protected in landmark districts, because every project must go through a review process with the Landmarks Preservation Commission. So we have done it in some places in New York, but at the end of the day, we're the city of the Empire State Building and the Chrysler Building, and the issue is, do these things move our soul? Are they good enough for New York? And I think that's what Michael was thinking about also, that they can't just be pieces of real estate, but they have to be great enough. And New York is a skyscraper city, and we should be able to build skyscrapers.
Right. Well, your firm was included in the roundup in the Times of the outbreak of cantilevered buildings, which means developers, and I think you mentioned that word, which means developers don't just buy the air rights, they build in the space over a neighboring building, mm-hmm. extending outward and up. Why was that necessary for the building you're designing?
Well, the pressure for good sites in Manhattan is extreme. And people who have sites, often in a historic neighborhood, have something called air rights. Their site allows for development, but they don't want to develop their site. But the parking lot next door is clean and available for development. So they sell their rights. The actual terminology is they merge their zoning lots.
So you can go up, make a left over the other building, and keep going up.
Right. And the tool cantilever is just a structural term about, you know, like a diving board. You can have your structural anchor at one point, and the rest of the structural support is outboard of that.
Right.
But these are very tricky things to do them well. I mean, the IBM building is one that I think was done for the pure joy of it, as opposed to harvesting real estate value.
Another great example, one of my favorite skyscrapers, Citicorp Center. Right on 53rd and Lex. So you can see a wonderful example of how a skyscraper accommodates an existing institution. You have St. Peter's Church nestled underneath that skyscraper, and Hugh Stubbins, a true visionary, built the skyscraper around the church and gave us the first true public spaces that were something more than just a patch with a bench.
Let's get one more very practical question in here from Mark in Livingston. Mark, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yes, hi, this is Mark from Livingston. I always enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Brian. I'd like to ask a question. How do you get the water from the bottom floor all the way to the top floor? Because there's got to be tremendous pressure. And how do you use the toilet or a shower on a very high floor? I'm just curious.
All right. How do you flush a toilet on the 163rd floor, Rick?
Well, what you do... Well, what One Brine Park does is it captures rainwater in part and stores water in tanks, in stages in the building, in a series of locations, and that gravity pressure creates pressure for those blocks of floors. So what most skyscrapers do is they actually pump water up to the top and hold it at the top, and then the gravity pressure is what gives you the pressure to flush toilets. Always important.
Judith, the two of you have talked about building skyscrapers for the love, for the joy. But in the book's introduction, you write about skyscrapers as symbols of corporate power and places where people work. But they're often places where the wealthy live. And those shadows on Central Park that I mentioned are being cast by empty pied-à-terre apartments, sometimes too often empty. Does it change the calculus over the value to the city?
Well, you know, I think there's good and bad. There's an up and a downside to this issue. The city has an aging infrastructure. I mean, I was recently in Tokyo, and those gleaming glass skyscrapers that they have make New York look positively medieval. So, one, you have to have enough bodies that can afford to live in these extremely tall towers.
And we have 30 seconds, I'm sorry to say.
Let's hope that the developers don't kill the thing they love. All these shadows are on the very park views that they're selling for millions and millions of dollars.
So we will have to leave it there. I've been speaking with Judith Dupré, the author of Skyscrapers, A History of the World's Most Extraordinary Buildings, and with Rick Cook of Cook Fox Architects. They will be joined by architect Adrian Smith this evening at the main branch of the New York Public Library to discuss Super Tall, Super Green at 6 p.m. There's a link for more information about the talk on our website. Thank you both so much. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Dave.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. Mo Rocca next. Stay with us.